I'm Mick the Game Caller Gledel, and welcome to a new series from Pulse 2, where I'm going to talk to the Bradford Bulls players about everything from where it all began in their careers, their breakthrough moments, the coach they have looked up to the most, their boyhood heroes from the sport, to everything, to their toughest opponent, their favourite ground, and their hopes for their career in the future. First up in the Pulse 2 Rugby League hot seat is Brandon Pickersgill, and I asked Brandon how he's coping with the coronavirus pandemic that is sweeping the UK.
I think most of all I'm just missing being in and around the boys and playing on a weekend, you know, all your life. Well, my life pretty much, what I do is I train and then I play on a weekend, and it's what most rugby players do. I haven't got another job, so it's all I do, and I'm missing that really. I'm just missing the routine on a day-to-day basis, so I'm trying to stick to that routine as best I can. And obviously I'm not going training at Tongue, so I'm trying to do my training at home as efficient as I can, and that's it really. Another thing as well is I'm doing a degree part-time alongside my rugby, so it's kind of a blessing in disguise. Is probably the only benefit to come from it for me is I've been able to really focus on my studies this year. I'm in my final year and my dissertation is due in 2 weeks. So I've been able to really crack on and probably give that more time than rugby for a change. You know, rugby usually takes over. So it's been good to come away from rugby in that sense. But I'm missing it like mad and I can't wait to get back.
What's the mood like amongst the other players? I've noticed that you've done a Bradford Bulls player quiz, which obviously I'm guessing helps alleviate some of that mental health strain on your well-being.
I think the mood's positive. You know, we're trying to stick together. You know, only way we're going to come through this is all together, and we're sticking together. You know, there's the WhatsApp chat, you know, the team chat that players are putting stuff in there. Now we've got a weekly quiz where everyone's catching up weekly and players are ringing each other or communicating however they want. But overall, the mood's positive. As I say, everyone's in the same boat. And for me, and I know a few others, it's just frustration and not knowing what's going on and when we're going to be back and how the season's going to pan out, because everything's in the air. No one knows what's going on. So I think in that sense, that's where the frustration's coming in. But people are trying to stay positive. You know, we can't let it beat us and we need to stay on top of it. I think that's the overriding mood in camp at the minute. Well, I say in camp, at home.
How's John Keir been with you throughout the coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, he's been really good, to be fair. You know, He's checked in with me, I think, every 2 weeks or weekly, you know. So, and I know he's been doing that with the other boys, and he's been ringing up and seeing how we are. And it's not all just about rugby. He's asking us how his own life's going, how his partners are, you know, whatever. He's just checking in that way, and he's making sure we're all fit and healthy, which is good. And he's also said that we can call him anytime we need him. And, you know, I wouldn't hesitate to pick up the phone and ring John if I was struggling mentally or I had a problem or just a question or I just wanted a chat, you know. So in that sense, he's been great for me, and I'm sure he's been great for the other boys as well.
And I'm guessing, Brandon, that those support mechanisms are going to be crucial, because while you yourself might not have felt the need to call John, there might be some other members of the Bradford Bulls squad who might be in a far worse predicament.
Yeah, 100%, mate. You know, we all deal with things differently, and I can imagine this can be really testing some people at the minute, you know, not being able to socialise and do what they're used to doing. So in that sense, you know, players that are struggling or maybe do want to chat a bit longer, you know, having John and Mark Clare, it's great for the players to know that we won't be judged and it'll stay confidential. So, yeah, then people that are struggling or maybe do just want to chat or are feeling a bit alone, you know, everyone feels alone sometimes if you're living at home at the minute and you've been isolating for the past 6 or 7 weeks, you know, it can just get lonely. So I think in that sense, it's great that John's there and he's welcoming as he is and open for a chat. It can only be beneficial to the players.
You've just said that, obviously, everything's fluid. No one knows when the sport is going to return. What sort of communication have you had from the Bradford Bulls? Has there been any sort of set time or any indication of when you're likely to be allowed to return training?
Being honest, mate, nothing, you know. I've been watching Sky Sports News and looking on Twitter and this and that, but in terms of from the club, we've had nothing at the minute, and that tells me that the club have had nothing probably from them above, which will probably be the RFL. So we haven't got anything. We don't know when we're going to be back. We don't know what context the season's going to be finished in. So all we're doing is doing the training programs we get sent, and we can't really do much more. And as I said previously, we haven't been told anything at the minute in terms of when we're going to be back and what it's going to look like when we're back, whether that's behind closed doors or whatever. So yeah, mate, it's just all up in there. I've just told you everything. No, I don't know anything. So no one knows anything at the minute.
We spoke to Mark Sawyer last weekend, Brandon, and obviously he said all the Bradford Bulls players and staff have been furloughed. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's happening across the country, isn't it? And obviously, I think as a game, we needed to do it to survive. So the government have stepped in and paid 80% of the wages, and obviously, it's crucial for the sport to survive. And so my thoughts on that is it's been good for us players. Obviously, if we're not getting paid, then you know we can't pay his mortgages and this and that. So in terms of being furloughed, it's only been what's needed, in my opinion. You know, we're all working people at the end of the day, and everyone's entitled to that money, as the government have said. So there's no reason why we shouldn't have been furloughed. And to be honest, mate, all the team and the squad are still training as hard as we can. So it's no different in that sense.
Talk us through how coronavirus lockdown training session looks like, Brandon. What does it look like? Obviously, you're stuck at home. What's the regime, the routine?
So for me, I'm quite lucky. I live over the road from a park. So we get sent sessions to do each week, a program, and it's usually one field session and one gym session per day, and then with a few days off in between. So a session for me will look like I'll go over to the park, I'll set my cones out and my timer on my phone, whatever I need to do. I'll complete that. I'll take a ball with me. I don't know if you've seen that video I quickly made. I'll take a ball. I'll do some kick catch and some passing, as well as that running, you know, trying to keep my skill ticking off. Dunno's as well has sent us some grip stuff and some ball work to be doing. You know, if you've got access to the equipment, which I have, so I'm fortunate in that sense, that'll probably take me around an hour, maybe an hour and a half if weather's nice, like it has been today. Then I'll come home. And then if the weather's nice, as I said, I'll go in the back garden. I've got a few weights. And as SNC, Adam has sent us a programme, but he's individualised them all, so depending on what equipment you've got. So I've got a barbell and some dumbbells. So he's done a programme for me, which incorporates that equipment. So I'll crack on with that gym session, and then that'll be me for the day. So just weather permitting, whether it's inside my house or outside my house. But over the past few weeks, it's been quite nice. So I've been able to train in the garden, which is good. And that'll be a usual day for me.
The government not only agreed to furlough the players and the staff employees, they give the game, the sport of rugby league, and an emergency loan of £16 million. Obviously, one of the impacts of rugby league getting that emergency loan, Brandon, was the impact rugby league clubs have on their surrounding communities, especially those with strong links to their community clubs. Just how important, Brandon, somebody obviously who's come from, you know, playing junior rugby league in the community to now playing at the championship level with the Bradford Bulls, how important is that link?
Oh, it's massive, mate. You know, without the community game, you know, the game don't survive as a whole. I think there's too many unsung heroes in the community game to, you know, give them a shout out. But within a few miles of me, you've got Berkenshaw, you've got West Bowling, you've got Oddsall Sedgeburg, you've got Wivesey Warriors. So there's four clubs right there within probably 2 miles of my house. And without them, you know, people will be struggling. And as you said, mate, I play a community game myself and I loved it. That's where my love for rugby league and my passion came from. And you realise just in them communities just how much of a family game it is. And I still contact people and speak to people I met when I was 9 and 10 years of age playing community rugby. And I see the mums and dads now. And, you know, it's great, mate. And the community game is massive. I can't put it down enough. How big the community game is just for people, you know, maybe bored or want to get into physical exercise or meet some new mates. You know, everyone's got their own reasons for playing rugby league, but the community game is massive. And for me, it's something that I really enjoyed when I was a youngster, and I love going to watch my mates play open edge now, and all the camaraderie that comes with it.
So where did it all begin, Brandon? Which was your first taste of rugby league?
So it all began in East Bowling, Merchants Court. I don't know if you've heard of it. So Erwell Street, around that area. I were only young at the time, 4 or 5, 6 years old, I can't remember. My next door neighbour played for Bradford Dudley Hill, you know, so another community team there. He were a few years older than me, and him and his dad used to play in garden all the time, just passing rugby ball and playing. And the one said, "Oh, why don't you join in?" And ever since then, that was where it all began. You know, I'll never forget playing with my neighbour when I was younger. He's called, still know him now and speak to him now. He's called Danny Wilcock, and I stay in contact with him now, and his dad, Raymond. So I'll never forget, that's where it started for me. And then from there, I think I was 6 or 7. Dudley Hill were the closest club to my house, but they didn't have an age group for training at that time for my age. And I can't remember how it worked, but my dad spoke to someone that asked about work, and someone knew Mark Lilly, believe it or not, Jordan Lilly's dad. I were only 7 years of age at this point, and Jordan Lilly's dad, Mark, were running a team at Stanley. Met Jordan Lilly then, you know, 13 years ago, or 14 years ago, it probably is now, and Jordy's dad, and Jordy's dad were coaching. So that's where it all started for me in my amateur game. And then when I was, I think I was 12 or 11, I were at Stanley, and we had a really good team, and there were too many players signing up, and I think we had 30, 40 players then, or it was somewhat ridiculous like that, and Michael will tell you himself. And we had to do it where one team played one half and then another team played another half, just because there were that many players. So, and one of my best pals at the time, he'd recently moved house and he started playing for Shawcross, and he was like, "Oh, come over to Shawcross for me, you know." And I thought, "Oh, I'll give it a try out." So not against Stanley, I'm still best mates with them all now. I went over to Shawcross for two years, another great community club, you know, right near Dewsbury, to be fair. Played there for 2 or 3 years, absolutely loved it there, you know. They accepted me in, and then lo and behold, a few years later, Stanley had done an A, a B, and I think a C team. So they had 3 teams back then. And I think I was about 15 where I really decided I wanted to knuckle down and make a career of it. And then I went back over to Stanley. I phoned Mark Lilly. It was sweet. He said, "Yeah, mate, of course you can come back." So I went over to Mark's. I don't think I had a coffee at the time, but what we'd call a coffee now, I had a chat with him. And back to Stanley for the 14s and 15s, and then stayed there ever since until I signed for Bradford.
What position were you, Brandon, throughout all these, you know, changes?
So when I was younger, I think I hit a growth spurt a bit younger than everyone else. So I played loose forward. Played loose forward for ages at Shawcross. And then I remember, I can't remember how it worked, but the rules changed the year above. And the coach at the time, Darren Kerr, I remember he always used to say, "You're going to be a fullback." He says, you won't play 13, you're going to be a fullback. And at the time, I was like, "Oh no, because we didn't have fullbacks then. It was just you lose forwards, you stand offs or whatever. Because we didn't kick in the game, so I won't be a fullback." And then lo and behold, I went to Stanley. We had Ashton Gordon, Jordan Lilly, the one me, and we all just used to swap and change at Stanley at that point. One week I'd be fullback or stand off and scrum half. And I think when I were at Stanley, we just rotated each, and there'd be times where Geordie had got a fullback and me and Ashton would be 6 and 7, or Ashton and Geordie 6 and 7. You know, the trio we had there, we just used to rotate. So I'd say throughout my amateur years, I was 13, 6, 7 and fullback. So we played all over. But obviously, I have great memories playing at Stanley, wherever. But, you know, we were just happy to play. We weren't really fussed about positions back then.
Who was your first boyhood hero? Who was the first player you watched on Sky, the BBC, and you really admired and looked up to?
There were a few, mate. Obviously, born in Bradford, Robbie Paulwell. He was God back in them days. And, you know, I remember the photos of him in, what's the place? Murrayfield, you know, lifting the trophy back then. And that game.
Great times.
Yeah, great times, mate. But I was only a babby then, so that's as far as I can remember. And then when I started growing up and actually, you know, understanding the game, I used to love watching Danny Maguire. I thought his support play was outstanding, and I think he's got the record for most tries. So them two players growing up were probably my first two heroes.
What would you say was your breakthrough moment, Brandon?
It's a tough question, that, making me think here. I can't really hit the nail on a moment. It was probably where we was in League One, and around, I think it was the first 2 months I'd gone from, you know, on the fringes, reserves, and then it was the training sessions where John and them are 13. You know, we're on 13 on 13, and I'd pretty much regularly be in the starting 13, whether that be fullback or standoff at the time. So I think probably that period of time where at the beginning of League One, where John Keir first came in, I'd say that was definitely my breakthrough into the first team. Yeah, definitely.
And I'm guessing that 2018 season, certainly at the start, when Greg McNally was at fullback, and then he suffered that unfortunate injury, I believe against
Oldham. Probably around that period, then, Mick. Yeah.
And then obviously you got your chance, and I think it's fair to say ever since, you know, you've managed to cement that number one spot at the club.
Yeah, you know, it's not been easy, I'll tell you that. You know, I've had my ups and downs, as many players do. You know, I think I've needed to go through that, you know, getting dropped and not being as fit as I should be and all that jazz, you know, to be where I am now and understand just how important it is to stay switched on week by week. I think me coming through, I was a bit naive as to think, you know, well, you can't stop working, but you think, oh, I'm full back now, I'll be there next week. And if you can never rest on what you've done, you're only as good as your last game. And I think John Keir's made me believe that. So every week now, you need to work even harder than the previous week. And I think that's probably evident in probably the past 6-7 months of my game. I think I've really come on in that sense, and not resting on my laurels and what I've done previously. It's all about what you are doing and how you're going to get better.
Brandon, do you look over your shoulder at
definitely, mate.
The reserve performances?
Yeah, definitely.
Players like Alex Stevenson, who's...
Yeah, there's two great fullbacks in the reserves, Alex Stevenson and Billy Jowett. And, you know, in pre-season, John said, oh, these two are going to be training with you, and, you know, like, they were in your shoes sort of thing, and they're going to be hot on your heels. So anything you do, you need to try to be better than them. And I took it as a challenge, and I kind of embraced it. You know, when you're young and coming up, you'll do all you can to get in that team, as I did. So I really tried to push myself in pre-season and try to keep hold of that shirt, because I know if I slip up, similar to if I get injured like Greg McNally did, there's two lads there that can willingly step in, and I've seen both of them playing. They're both great players, they're both really classy players. So without doubt, I'm looking over my shoulder every week, man. I know if my performances slip or if they dip, them two are going to be right there, especially with the new reserve setup. You know, they're playing week in, week out themselves, so they're fresh, and them boys are just knocking on the door waiting for their opportunity. And I think that's same throughout the team, Mick.
Who would you say you've learnt the most from in your time as a rugby league player?
Probably in terms of skill and attacking, Greg McNally. You know, when he come to the club, I just started coming through. I've not played many games at fullback, and he was your veteran fullback sort of, and the way he could hide behind the attack and create the extra number. You know, John used to say to me, watch what Greg does. And I think in that sense, the attacking sense, I've really learnt a lot in from Greg McNally. But I've also learnt a lot from Ethan Ryan, believe it or not. Obviously coming through the system with him and training week by week, I've seen how he slotted into the team and became a real key player in a short space of time whilst he was a kid. And he's someone I look up to now, and he's a good friend of mine. But the way he committed himself and how he was at training and how his performance didn't dip, it's someone that I looked up to. So I think them two have had a big influence on my career so far, probably playing wise. One more is Chiz. Well, when Chiz was there, he used to bark orders and boss me around the field, and you know what Chiz can do. So probably them three players I've learned a lot off from my time at Bradford.
Just focusing on Ethan Ryan for a minute, Brandon. He obviously had a tough decision to make in the off-season. He decided to, you know, go into Super League, and he's been given his chance against Wigan, and he ever tries scoring debut.
Yeah, you know, all Ethan needed, I think he backed himself, which is something that Ethan would do, and we know Mickey's got all the ability, so fair play for him backing himself, and he scored on his debut. And I think this virus come at the wrong time for him. You know, he would probably just make him getting a foot in the team, and there are a few players around him injured. Obviously I speak to him regularly, so I reckon this virus has come at the wrong time for him. But he worked his way into the OKR team, and it's just a shame that all this has come about.
Which coach has had the most positive effect on you as a player? I mean, it could be John Keir now, it could be Mark Lilley when he was your coach at Stanley.
I think all the coaches I've had have been great. You know, Mark Lilley, you know, he used to say he's a dad to all the lads at training when we were back at Stan. He said he's got like 20 kids, which is funny now we think back about it. But the most positive effects, they've all had positive impacts. And Chris Smith as well at Shawcross, he was great, you know, someone I really look up to. But the most positive impacts have either been Matt Diskin or John Keir, because Matt Diskin were a coach who always, because we were in the championship at the time, and he used to say, you need to train like a Super League player or you're never going to get there. You know, if you train like a championship player, you'll always stay in championship. And he really installed that hard work ethic and the real focus at training of trying to make yourself better and your teammates better by training harder instead of just accepting that you're a championship team. And obviously John Keir has gave me all the confidence and you know, to go and really make a name for myself, give me that opportunity to play first team. So I'm thankful for John in that aspect. And the way John, you know, he's brought my game on, he's sat down with me, and even when I'm not playing well, he tells me what I need to do better. And yeah, probably John's had the most impact, but secondly, closely forward, there'll be Matt Diskin in that aspect. But also, now you've got me talking and thinking, Lee Beattie and Mark Dunnoff, when, you know, they've been there throughout, and it's just little things that they've done, you know. They're kind of the stalemates of the club, and anything I've got, any issues, or they're always there to give me little tips and help out. So, as I say, mate, every coach that I've had has had a positive impact on me. Probably Matt Diskin and John Keir have been the biggest out of them.
Players like yourself, Brandon, Liam Kirk, Ross Oakes, Evan Hodgson, you know, you've been at the Bradford Bulls now for close to 8 years from signing on the scholarship.
It's crazy, isn't it, mate?
To where you are now.
Yeah.
Do you look at people like Lee Beattie, Mark Dunning as family?
Oh, definitely, mate. You know, as annoying as they both are, you know, I know they'd do anything for me, and I hope they know that anything they've got or issues, they could come to me, and if I can help in any way, I'd do that. So, yeah, definitely look at them as family, and I'd go to them with any problems I have, not on the field, off the field as well, and I know that I can trust both of them. So, yeah, I do consider them family, mate, definitely.
What would you say your best experience playing rugby league has been?
So my debut, I know we got absolutely whatever the scoreline was, but you know, it that time for my family, you know, they were listening on the radio, they didn't make it over to Toulouse, but it was a real proud moment for them, and I think that's up there with the best experiences. You know, I can't put into words the feeling of working all year, well, all my young life, I was only young at the time, but to finally step out and play on that field, you know, that was a great feeling. Another one would probably be that season, promotion to the championship. Sorry, you know, I had a great season back then personally, but the group we had were a great group of lads and fond memories, you know, when it flashbacks now and pops up on your social media, you know, I always speak to them players, you know, Mini, Ethan, you know, there's too many to list, but yeah, there's great memories then. And then probably the game at the start of the year, the Rob Burrow game, you know, to play. I know that it wasn't a competitive game in that sense, but whenever you play Leeds, it's competitive. And but to play at a packed out Edinley, you know, I'd been to them games as a youngster at Edinley, and I remember fireworks used to go off and whatever, and I used to think, oh, like, wow, oh my God, you know, imagine being a part of this. And then on that day, then I did get a taste of that, and it was great to play in front of that many people and for such a great cause, and, you know, a player that's done everything in the game and someone that I really look up to myself. So, yeah, that's up there as well.
I guess when we just go back to you, you did. It was 3 years ago, believe it or not, 3 years ago this week,
yeah,
strangely
no, it
enough.
Popped up on the thing the other week, didn't it? Yeah.
Well, anyone that knows me, I keep all my programmes and commentary notes and team sheets. And when you look at that team sheet and you see players like yourself, Matty Staughton, Evan Hodgson, it really does hit home, you know,
yeah,
what
just
an incredible journey you've been on, despite, you know, still only being
yeah, I agree,
the
mate.
Right,
you know,
side of 20.
yeah, the journey that we've all been on together has been crazy, you know. As you know, there's not many teams like Bradford, and we like to do things a bit different. And obviously, a bit going through that together with them boys, you know, I wouldn't change anything about it, the ups and downs. It's been great, and it's a journey that we're all still on, whether that be at Bradford or different clubs, which is always great to see and stay in touch with them boys. But yeah, looking back at that team sheet, I've seen it myself, well, myself and Matty starting on bench. And we were both making his debut that day. And I remember we were both pooing his pants, I'll say. But when I look back now, you know, it's just, it's great memories. And everyone in that team's come a long way. You know, you Evan Hodgson and Liam Kirk and Ross Oakes, you know, that I think you forget just how young these players are. And as I say, Ross Oakes and Liam Kirk are real stalemates, and they're the backbone of our team, and they're solid every week. And probably the work they do goes unnoticed, but it's two more players that I can just name off a list of many, you know, that have come off the production line and that love the club and, you know, are trying to get the club back where it belongs.
Brandon, John Keir regularly names 8, 9, 10, sometimes 11 homegrown players in his 17-man side on a match day. How important is that to you and those players, knowing that, you know, like you say, you played with Jordan Lilley back when you were 8, 9, 10 years old? You know, how important is, you know, that to the Bradford Bulls?
Yeah, it's very important, mate. I think it gives the boys in the academy and the reserves, it gives them something really to aim for. You know, John Key is not afraid to chuck these young boys in, and it's probably done us really well this year in terms of finances and stuff like that, you know, being able to breed these players that are more than good enough and give them their shot instead of having to, I don't know, spend whatever else on X amount of players. So it's great in that sense, and as you say, it's really important that the boys that come through are sticking together. You know, the longer we play together, the better our combinations and understandings are going to be. You know, I've played with Ross Oakes and Liam Kirk and Odjo for 4 years, 5 years regularly now, you know, not just here and there, so regularly. And I know their game and they know my game, so the more people that we can get like that and coming through and, you know, knowing the system and what it means to play for this club, it's only a positive in my opinion.
When we look at, obviously, two very good friends of yours, Elliot Minchella, Ethan Ryan, they're now in the Super League. This sort of like looking into the crystal ball, what are your hopes for your career and development in the future?
Yeah, looking at them, you know, I'm not going to lie, I do want to taste of that. I want to push myself. I've always said in my career, I don't want to have the opportunity to play at the best level and then not take it. In that sense, you know, I think you'd be a fool to not go to Super League. I think if the opportunity is there, Mick, you've got to take it to test yourself and play at the highest level. I don't want to die wondering in that sense. So my dream, as fun as it sounds, is to take Bradford to the Super League. That's what I'd love to do. But yeah, I think any player who says I don't want to play Super League and at the highest level, they're probably fibbing a bit. So that's where I stand on that. I'd love a crack at Super League in the future. Obviously not. I don't know how long that's going to be if that comes around, but I think I've worked all my life to be the best rugby player I can. So if that opportunity did arise, hopefully with Bradford, but it'd be one that obviously I'd be interested in, because every player wants to play at the highest level they can and test themselves. And I'd rather go up and test myself, and if it didn't work out, it didn't work out. But I won't want to die wondering, if that makes sense.
The clubs had to play at Dewsbury for this season. It's looking likely the club might be still playing there next season due to the coronavirus. But how important is it, Brandon, that the Bradford Bulls return to Bradford and play in the city's boundary?
Yeah, it's massive that we return to Bradford. Obviously, being a Bradford lad myself, I was frustrated having to go over to Dewsbury, and I feel for the fans. I know people say, oh, it's only 15, 20 minutes, but it's different. If you walk into the game, if you live in Aerotol or you catch the bus, it can completely throw up your plans. And I've spoke to a few fans, you know, just in person, and they've said, oh, we won't travel to Dewsbury, we're Bradford fans, we're not going over there, this and that. And I understand it, Mick, I totally understand it. And it's massive for the club to get back to Bradford. We're a Bradford club, we're not the Dewsbury Bulls, as people have been saying, and it's frustrating. But I think everyone's understood that it's what's had to be done for the club to survive, and hopefully we can get back to Bradford in the future, because the Bradford Bulls need to be in Bradford, mate.
Who would you say, Brandon, just going back onto the rugby league playing field, I know you're missing it, who would you say the toughest opponent you've ever come across against?
York halfback Connor Robinson. He's a real competitive player, and he's a classy player, and he always looks to find me out of position or put the kicks up. So in toughness in that sense, in being able to play against, he's a very smart player, and he's one who I know I've got to be on my game when I come up against York, because he can punish you. Who else is the toughest? Toulouse halfback John Ford, I think he's called Jonathan Ford, his full name. He's another one where he'll kick it on the third tackle, you know, Toulouse play, he'll chip over, he'll banana kick it to fullback, you know. So he's another one that's a tricky one to play against, and it's one of them where, you know, you need to be ready for anything playing Toulouse, and he's a tough opponent in that aspect.
So for the listeners here, Brandon, while we've got you on, Connor Robinson's 40 metres out, and the game's on the knife edge, nothing to split Bradford in. what's going through your mind when, you know, you're in that high pressure situation, those high intensity, you know, game changing moments when that ball's up in the air?
You're just trying to stay switched on and do the best you can, you know. Moments like that, you know, we've been in games like that where it's end to end and the pressure's high. You can't make a mistake. So you just need to think positive, whether he's going to try find a corner or he's going to put the ball up. You need to attack the situation positive, and you can't back out of anything. I think that's how I try to do it. You need to attack the ball, and it just depends on what he's doing, Mick, to be honest with you. But as I've said, when games are that tight, errors are vital, as you know. So number one would be don't make an error. Number two would be attack the ball wherever it may be. And that's probably what's going through my head at the time.
If you were to give some advice to a young rugby league player who's currently listening to this, or perhaps advice to your younger self, what would that advice be?
Just be to keep going and don't let anyone tell you you're not good enough. You know, there's been instances in my career, many players' careers, where they've been told they're not good enough. And I usually find the best players don't believe that and believe in their own ability. So the advice I'd give is to keep going the sport and, you know, don't let people get you down. And as long as you're doing your best and you stay true to yourself, you know, you won't go far wrong. Whether that be a career in the game or not, you know, who knows. But that'd be my advice. Keep working hard and stay true to yourself.
So thank you very much to Brandon Pickersgill for taking time to answer questions in the Pulse 2 Rugby League Hot Seat. Don't forget to keep checking out on the Pulse 2 website for more interviews and who is going to be next.